When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Meet Tomboy X. Makers of the original boxer briefs for women, Tomboy X designs gender and size-inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com. And welcome to the Halloween Slasher Spectacular.
Hello, I'm Caroline.
And I'm Kristen. I hope there's spooky music playing in the background.
I know. There is in my head.
So, happy Halloween, everyone.
Yes, happy Halloween. It's one of my favorite holidays, non-holiday holidays.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It is such a beautiful time of year. And on Stuff Mom Never Told You, we like to do a special episode for Halloween. Last year, we did it on the whole sexy female costume thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of bracing myself already. We're recording this a couple weeks before Halloween.
Yeah, I'm going to be a sexy David Bowie from Labyrinth.
Ooh.
Who, I mean, you don't even have to really try to make that sexy. He is just sexy. And a Tina Turner wig. It's
I look awesome. Dance the magic dance.
You got that right.
I don't know what I'm going to be. Maybe I'll just be like a sock puppet or something.
a giant person-sized sock puppet. I like it. Well, today, Kristen, our topic is women in slasher films.
Mm-hmm.
And are they killed more often?
Yeah, because women always seem to be dying in slasher films.
Yeah, there's lots of screaming and dragging of bodies, mm-hmm, and bleeding and stuff.
Lots of blood.
We're going to examine this because a lot of researchers, when slasher films really started to get popular, mm-hmm, I'd say like in the 70s and 80s, there was a lot of research that said, yes, women are killed more, injured more. They are victims more often. Their suffering is portrayed longer on screen.
Yeah.
But then a lot of people, more recently, especially, looking at 90s movies too, a lot of people recently have come out and said, well, they're not really victims more often. Maybe you just notice it more.
Yeah. And there's some interesting archetypes that have emerged in the slasher genre, which is a subset of the horror genre.
Right.
We're really talking about slasher films where there's, you know, like Halloween, Friday the 13th, where there's, mm-hmm, someone out there killing a bunch of folks.
Right, with knives and such.
Yeah, rarely guns. Slasher victim or slasher murderers, never, you know, they
that would be too quick.
They like to challenge themselves with knives and razors and things like that. But let me not get ahead of,
right,
myself.
Well, a couple of things we're going to talk about. That critics and researchers have claimed that movies like Nightmare on Elm Street feature, one,
mm-hmm,
acts of extreme violence portrayed in graphic detail.
True.
Two, women singled out for injury and death, hence the labels of women in danger and violence to women films. Mm-hmm. And three, scenes of explicit violence juxtaposed with sexual or erotic images.
And then the question of whether or not those themes in slasher films could be desensitizing us and sort of setting up this association between sex and violence, particularly as it is portrayed toward or as it pertains to female victims.
Right.
And whether it's having kind of like a negative effect on us. If we are during the Halloween season, for instance, I like to watch as many frightening films as possible, which
I'm such a pain.
I know it makes it really, it causes a lot of sleepless nights. I'm not going to lie, but, still for the 90 minutes, it's fun.
I like to watch a lot of Disney movies during October.
It's nice to, you kind of have to balance it out, such as, you know, watching the original Black Christmas followed by the Charlie Brown Halloween special.
You know, when I was a kid, this is totally off topic, but when I was a kid, the Garfield Halloween movie always terrified me. There was a scene where he has to hide from ghost pirates in a cabinet, and I was terrified.
I haven't watched that.
I highly recommend it.
On the edge of your seat.
Researchers Daniel Lenz and Edward Donnerstein are two of the people who argue that slasher films disproportionately single out women for attack and often include the mutilation of women in scenes that feature sexual content. But a lot of researchers have argued against these assumptions. In sex and violence in slasher films, researchers' analysis of popular 90s films found that the movies rarely mix scenes of sex and violence, calling into question claims that slasher films that portray eroticized violence blunt males' emotional responses. So there's not as many scenes that pair violence and sex as maybe we think there are. I'm sure there are movies that have a lot of that and movies that don't have much at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it averages out to not be that significant.
Maybe it would be helpful for us to quickly offer a little timeline of how the slasher genre really developed.
Yeah. Sapolsky and Molitor in Content Trends in Contemporary Horror Films broke it down. Horror was established in the 1930s with the release of Dracula and Frankenstein, but by the late 40s, the desire not to offend their audiences had pretty much blunted the genre and made it almost extinct. By 1950, we have the aftermath of World War II, the detonation of the A-bomb. People are getting a little nervous. They're having drills where they get under their desks. Mm-hmm. A subgenre developed of science fiction horror, and it sort of vented fears of the atomic menace.
Mm-hmm. And in the 1950s, with the development of the teenage culture in the U.S., this is when you have competition from television in this new consumer market with teenagers that's really developing. And so they start making horror teen picks, especially in color, to shock these younger audiences.
Right. And teens had been watching a lot of these older movies on TV. And sort of getting into the horror thing. And so when people realized, just like anything with teenagers, as soon as you realize you can make money off of them from something, it becomes huge. So, these horror movies really took off. And in the 1960s, they started to really become more explicit in their portrayals of sex and violence. You have movies like, I have to take a really deep breath before I say this title. The Incredibly Strange Creatures Who Stopped Living and Became Mixed Up Zombies. And I watched the trailer for this last night. I'm never going to watch it, but it looks hysterical. It looks like a terrible version of Big because a guy takes his girlfriend to the carnival and she really wants to go to the gypsy, and the prediction, something happens and then he becomes a zombie.
Oh, no.
But it's a musical.
It's a musical?
It's a musical.
A horror musical?
Zombie-tacular.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That's wow.
I know. I can't top that, but Alfred Hitchcock can.
Yes, he can.
And in 1960, Psycho single-handedly launched a new subgenre called gore horror, which eventually did give rise to slasher films.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas before, maybe some of these movies were looked upon as, oh, I don't know, silly.
Mm-hmm.
This movie actually had the weight of Alfred Hitchcock behind it. His money, his fame, the respect that he got made Psycho more popular.
And Psycho also planted the seeds for a number of the slasher tropes that we'll talk about in more detail, such as, you know, Norman Bates, the mother-obsessed killer, and the attractive female victim played by Janet Leigh.
Right. Yeah, all these guys who were sort of obsessed with women in a weird way and maybe kept preserved mothers and grandmothers lying around.
Yeah, it seems like there's always a strange relationship with some major female in their life, and they're either the slasher, when they're males anyway, the male slasher killers, often are either highly sexualized, like there's some kind of like sexual deviant, like Nightmare on Elm Street, or they're desexualized completely.
Right.
Like, well, Leatherface.
There's Michael in Halloween who went on his lifetime killing spree after he saw his sister having sex with her boyfriend in their parents' bed.
Right.
And then he went around killing women as if he were killing his sister all over again, I guess.
Whereas when the slasher killer... when the slasher killer is a woman, usually her rage is related to some kind of wrong done to her by a man.
Correct.
Usually romantic.
Just like in Attack of the 50-Foot Woman.
Uh-huh.
Another incredible trailer. I actually have two incredible trailers I want to talk about. One is Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, which is not, it wasn't in the 60s. I think it was 1958. But she is so angry that her good-for-nothing husband is out running around on the town.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, you know, she's out driving around and she encounters like some nuclear something or other from space.
Right.
And, you know, naturally, like this giant hand comes down and touches her. And she becomes a giant woman. I'm really unclear on the details. So she's a really angry woman walking around in lingerie, but impeccable hairstyle the whole time. Just attacking people and ripping roofs off things. So there's that. And then there was Play Misty For Me, which before we read about all this horror stuff, I had never heard of. It's starring Clint Eastwood. And, okay, so it features, he's a DJ, a radio DJ, and this woman is a fan, and she always calls in and requests a song,
Misty.
And finally, they have he picks her up at a bar, they have a fling, and when he gets involved with someone else, things get weird. Like, you know, she's doing all, like, the boiling the bunny type of stuff, you know,
good, stalking
him, and it's all crazy. But I don't think I'll ever be able to take it seriously because the version of the trailer that I watched, I think, was the one that was edited to look hysterical.
Aw.
So, but it's funny. Yeah, there's a lot of stabby stuff. And so it seems like horror movies that feature women as the killers are more like the spurned woman.
Right.
The look at how terrifying this woman is because she wants to love me kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of like creepy. She's like, whoa, you need to...
Whoa, lady.
Calm down.
I didn't call for a reason.
And we have to cite 1963's Blood Feast for also helping kick off the gore slasher film. And I would like to note that I have not seen Blood Feast, but I would like to, since it was produced by Herschel Gordon Lewis, and it's about an Egyptian caterer who murders women in Miami in order to use their entrails to reanimate a dormant Egyptian goddess. Sounds like my kind of Halloween flick.
Yeah, I did read a description of it that involved, like, well, I think some kids were necking.
Uh-huh.
And some girl got her part of her brain chopped off or something. I don't know. There were descriptions of brains in the sand, like like brains through an hourglass.
Well, this is, Blood Feast is significant, even though it's, I think, one of the lesser known horror films, because it was one of the first to use that combination of the really attractive females and really intense violence, and it made a lot of money.
Right. And let's not forget 1968's Night of the Living Dead, with zombies and women and such.
But I will, there is one point though, that Sarah Bickley, wrote, about the difference between zombie movies and slasher films, especially as they relate to women. She points out that zombie movies are often about groups of people, and it's typically humans struggling to work together to defeat these zombies. Whereas slasher movies are about individuals where a lot of times one man is doing all the killing, and only one girl will outwit him and survive.
That sounds like a tagline for a movie. Yeah, and what Kristen's talking about is the final girl, the girl who survives. And this theme really came up starting in the 70s with Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes.
With the girl who just fights and fights to survive, and at the end is the only one standing.
Should I drop the name of the final girl in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, or is that a terrible spoiler alert?
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, come on. Sure, go ahead. Okay, cover yours if you don't want.
Yeah. You don't, I guess it really makes no difference. But I was going through all of these old horror films, these seminal horror films, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, 1974. We have Sally as the final girl.
It's a good name. It's my mama's name.
In 1978, Halloween. We have Laurie as the only one who survives Michael's wrath. Friday the 13th, we've got Alice. Hell Night, 1981. Marnie. Nightmare on Elm Street, 84. Nancy. I mean, it goes on and on. Even in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, that comes out in 1986, final girl, Stretch.
Stretch. Yeah. I didn't even know that existed. I just knew about the remake. Yeah. Wasn't that Jessica Biel?
It was Jessica Biel.
Okay. That's all I really remember her from.
But back to this final girl archetype, Carol J. Clover, who wrote Men, Women, and Chainsaws, offers this nice analysis. She writes, the final girl is, on reflection, a congenial double for the adolescent male. She is feminine enough to act out in a gratifying way, a way unapproved for adult males, the terms and masochistic pleasures of the underlying fantasy, but not so feminine as to disturb the structure of male competence and sexuality.
Interesting.
Because if you think about a character like Laurie, played by Jamie Lee Curtis in the original Halloween, you know, she's the only one, she's attractive, but she's the only one within her group of friends who isn't sexually active, mm-hmm. and she's kind of ridiculed for being too bookish and not social enough.
Yeah, well, who's laughing now?
Exactly.
After everybody
well,
else.
Well, she was probably crying.
Yeah, I'm sure that was.
Or maybe cry laughing.
Yeah, could be. Okay. Well, let's look at people who aren't laugh crying anymore because they've been killed.
Because they're bleeding to death.
Yeah. So looking at more of these studies, looking into who's killed and who survived, females were not singled out for attack. Fewer than half of innocent victims are actually female in these movies. And the amount of violent acts actually increases against males in the 80s, while it dramatically drops for females. And that might have something to do with there were complaints to studios and producers and whatnot of violence against women. So that could have had a lot to do with it, too.
And really, if you are if you're a character in a horror film, if you want to guarantee that you will get slashed, just play a logical man, a logical Boy Scout leader guy who has some very formulaic plan for, you know, dodging the slasher on the loose. Yeah, no,
right.
Logic will not win.
Because it, what was that thing that said men who have really good plans in horror movies are often the first to be killed off so that the plot can continue.
And if you're mean-spirited.
Oh.
Slasher films don't like mean-spirited people or adulterers.
Oh, Lord.
But it might seem like women are more often the victims of slasher death because when it comes to the violent scenes, they are a lot more drawn out when it's a female victim as compared to a male victim. A lot of times the guys in slasher films, they die quick and dirty.
Mm-hmm.
With women, they will drag it out. They will torture us.
Yeah. We have to suffer. You have to watch us bleeding for a while.
Yeah, it's often referred to as torture porn.
Yeah. Yeah, and there are a lot of studies that look at porn and horror movies.
And I mean, because it is disturbing to watch. And it's also, you know, thinking about those films in the 1970s and 80s, it's understandable why a lot of film critics were not too comfortable calling them violence toward women films because of these extended scenes of women often, you know, scantily clad, being brutally murdered.
Yeah. Carol Clover certainly did not seem to like them in her introduction to her slasher film chapter in Men, Women, and Chainsaws. She said a slasher is the immensely generative story of a psycho killer who slashes to death a string of mostly female victims one by one until he is subdued or killed, usually by the one girl who survives. And she goes on to say that these movies are drenched in taboo and encroaching vigorously on the pornographic.
Yeah, and she also mentions that rape is often non-existent in slasher films, perhaps suggesting that sex and violence are substitutes for each other. Or, and I can't think of specific instances, but I know that I've seen in some of these death scenes, especially if it's a male slasher killing a female character, it's like the death and sexual assault are just combined into one very gory
scene.
Yeah,
lots of grossness.
Ugh. But one film that we have to mention that really took on all of these potentially anti-female themes of violence against women and over-sexualizing women in a lot of these, especially early slasher films. We got to talk about 1982's Slumber Party Massacre, which was written by Rita Mae Brown, and it was her attempt to satirize the slasher genre for its anti-feminist tropes. But Hollywood basically ended up getting the last laugh because it just sort of threw any satire out the door and made it a bloody romp.
Yeah, drills were involved.
Drills and a lot of female characters in saucy bedroom attire.
Mm. Well, it was a slumber party.
Yes.
And I don't know. I don't know how you dress up when you have slumber parties with your friends.
Yeah, it's about a serial killer, Russ Thorne, who escapes from a mental institution and terrorizes, you guessed it, a slumber party. And the New York Times was highly disappointed in the product. The film critic wrote, and this is in 1982, doesn't matter that in the name of progress, the filmmakers see to it that the occasional teenage boy is slaughtered along with plenty of girls. No, it doesn't. And the fact that Miss Brown and Miss Jones, that was the director, have obviously tried to inject a little satire and innovation into the genre just makes the ultimate vulgarity of their film all the more disappointing.
Ooh. Oh. But there is a last girl at the end, right?
Oh, yeah.
And she breaks his drill.
Yeah.
In a very metaphorical.
Right. The phallic drill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well,
moving on
to two women who participated in the horror genre are Karen Kusama and Diablo Cody. They made Jennifer's Body, which was starred Megan Fox a couple years ago. And this was part of an article in EW about Entertainment Weekly about women making up a huge chunk of the horror fan base. And Diablo Cody said that she had always been a huge horror fan and wanted to make a horror film for women.
Because that's probably the most perplexing part of all of this this research on slasher films, and especially how women are portrayed in slasher films and killed and sexualized, is that at the end of the day, women make up a majority of the people watching these movies, especially these days. For instance, and these aren't necessarily slasher films, but there are horror films, just to give you an idea. With The Ring, okay, 60% of the audience, female.
Yeah.
The Grudge, 65% female. The Exorcism of Emily Rose, 51% female. That's pretty close.
Yeah, I can't watch The Ring.
Yeah,
I'm a pansy. I can't. It terrifies me.
But you are among the minority, apparently.
I know. Yeah, Maitland McDonough, who's written about horror movies for about 20 years, said that maybe it's the toughness that some of these female characters convey that helps women identify with them. And she said that she's certainly seeing a lot more women in the audience now than she did 20 or 30 years ago.
Right. And there was a study that we found that analyzed slasher films that were made in the 70s and 80s, comparing them to their more contemporary remakes to see whether or not they treat the female characters or any differently. And this is coming from Chad Brewer's thesis. He was a student at LSU, and his thesis was called The Stereotypical Portrayal of Women in Slasher Films, Then Versus Now. And he examined the films Black Christmas, watch the 1974 edition. It is terrifying.
No.
Yeah, side note. He looked at Black Christmas, Halloween, Prom Night, Psycho, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Hills Have Eyes, The Hitcher, and When a Stranger Calls. And so he found that the remakes portray women a little bit better. Generally, they are more often seen as intelligent problem solvers. They're not as physically helpless toward male slashers, and I guess toward female enemies as well. Half of the remade films allowed the female characters to have very strong dialogue. But at the same time, the women of the remade films also had to remain feminine and beautiful before the killer attacks them and forces them to act more masculine in order to survive.
Right. Switching gender roles up.
Some things change, some things stay the same.
So true. Put that on a pillow. Yeah, talking about the appeal of women, Bob Weinstein says the appeal is in watching women in jeopardy and, most importantly, fighting back. Mm-hmm. So, you don't want to see a poor, helpless woman, just get beat up all the time. You want to see her kick butt.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there is, for whatever reason, I think there is more audience satisfaction when it is a female who's fighting back against Leatherface.
Yeah. Well, they do talk about boys in the audience who might cheer on the killer the whole movie while he's doing all of his gory killing and slashing and whatnot. But then they turn around and end up cheering for the last female, the final girl.
The final girl. Here's one more little trope that we found. Slashers prefer blondes for whatever reason.
Can that be the zombie remake of Gentlemen Prefer Blondes?
Zombies prefer blondes. It's true. The final girl is almost always brunette. And that probably has to do with a lot of bogus cultural stereotypes we have about blonde females that I do not agree with. Mm. But yeah, if I were in a horror film, I can breathe a little bit easier.
Good.
Yes.
Yeah. I my hair color changes. So yeah. I don't know. I think I'm okay.
I'm brunette, hopefully kind spirited and not an adulteress. So yeah. Hear that, Michael? Oh God. I'm not inviting trouble.
Yeah.
Well, I think to close things out, are there any horror films, slasher films in particular that you would recommend people to watch this Halloween season?
I really think you should all go out and watch that movie with a really long title about the zombie musical.
Watch the zombie musical.
Yeah.
I am really interested in, what was it? Misty?
Play Misty for me. Yeah.
Play Misty
for
me.
I really want to see that. The woman is insane in the movie. I mean, she didn't boil any bunnies, but I mean, she does everything but.
And if only to hear the song called Misty.
Yeah.
My ultimate favorite, but don't watch it alone, movie is 1974's Black Christmas.
I've never, what is it about?
It takes place over Christmas break, in a sorority house. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm going to say. it'll freak you out. So that is all. I hope that you all have enjoyed the Halloween slasher spectacular. And I hope you all enjoy a very safe and fun Halloween.
Indeed.
And let us know your favorite slasher films, too.
Yeah.
MomStuffAtHowStuffWorks.com is our email address. But this time, we're not going to read any of your emails. We are turning to Facebook because we got such a great response to our question of who are your favorite characters on female characters on TV. And there were so many awesome ones that we did not mention in the episode that I thought, Caroline, you and I could just call out some of them.
Sure.
So you have a few you want to toss out?
I do. I highly, highly support the nominations of Angela Lansbury in Murder, She Wrote.
Yes.
And Maxine Gray on Judging Amy.
I've never seen Judging Amy.
Oh, it was such a good show. I really liked it. I really did. But she was also in Cagney and Lacey.
Oh, okay. Okay. I liked how Nancy Botwin from Weeds was kind of controversial.
Really?
Yeah, because she plays this drug dealing mama.
Yeah.
And she's super tough and always drinking coffee through a straw.
Yeah.
And Mary Louise Parker, who I do love, but I could see how she can be kind of a polarizing figure.
Mm-hmm.
Buffy was far and away the number one pick. And you guys also love some Veronica Mars.
I tried to watch that show once and I was not successful.
Yeah, I haven't watched it. Blossom?
Yeah, Daria.
Daria, yeah.
I also had her same attitude towards volleyball. who else? Scully.
Scully, of course, from X-Files. Some women on TV today, Leslie Knope and Liz Lemon from Parks and Rec and 30 Rock, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
And then some ladies from back in the day, we have Laura Petrie, who was Mary Tyler Moore on the Dick Van Dyke Show, and then also Mary and Rhoda from the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
And let us not forget Elaine Bennis from Seinfeld.
I know, I can't believe there were so many I couldn't believe. Claire on Modern Family, who I really enjoy. Joan Holloway on Mad Men. The Connor women, Roseanne, Darlene.
Oh, and we have Topanga, she of the crimped hairstyle from Boy Meets World.
I loved Topanga. Audrey Horne from Twin Peaks I thought was a great suggestion. She's kind of a creepy character, but I love her.
Sydney Bristow, that's Alias, right? Or is it? Yeah.
Claire Fisher from 6 Feet Under, Donna from Doctor Who, Penny from The Big Bang Theory, Laura Holt from Remington Steele. I loved the variety of all these suggestions. So I guess thank you is what we're trying to say.
Yeah, it's good to know that there are so many good female characters on TV and in movies.
Yeah, and it reminds me of some TV I need to catch up on.
Yeah.
For real. Such as just two more from shows that I have not seen at all, which is kind of sad. Brenda Lee Johnson from The Closer.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I still
I love her. I carry around a giant black bag too, and I can never find anything in it.
Doesn't she have she's a Southern lady, right?
She is. She's from Atlanta.
See, I should be
But she has such a, you know, I don't know what people in the rest of the country think of people in Atlanta. I know people were disappointed that we didn't have Southern accents, but Brenda Lee, or Brenda, whatever her name is.
Brenda Lee Johnson?
Thank you. That's such a deep Southern accent.
Nice. So if they need their Southern accent fix after the podcast, they can watch The Closer.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds like. Well, with that, thanks everyone for writing in, for writing on our Facebook page, which you can go over and like us, leave a comment as well. You can also follow us on Twitter at Mom Stuff Podcast, and you can check out the blog during the week. It's Stuff Mom Never Told You at HowStuffWorks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.